Hey guys, welcome back to Shakedown Chan. We are live now. Apologies for technical difficulties. They happen. Technology's not perfect. So anyway, happy Mother's Day. Today is a great day, and I have a special member with me in the studio today. And I asked him if he, because I know you guys are here to listen to our content and not six-year-old's content, but I told him if he doesn't interrupt, he might get a few minutes at the end, so maybe you'll get to hear from him. I do have my Facebook Live on right now. It has the phone number to call in, which is 518-290-6601. And if you're out of the country, you will have to dial a 1 in front of that number. I will gladly answer calls with questions or just somebody wanting to chat or whatever. I did put out on Facebook that I was asking for ideas of what you guys wanted to hear, and I got a lot of feedback actually. So I'm using like 4 different things that I was sent from you guys, and it's really great. I have this one follower who has been really, really active the last few days on the pages and on the posts, and it's really good. So first of all, I want to start off with Boy Scouts. So my son, he's in Cub Scouts, and we just actually had his crossover yesterday from being a tiger and turning into a wolf. And so it's kind of relevant to my life right now. But I don't know if you guys have heard, but the Boy Scouts have changed their name. They dropped the boy in front, and now it's just the Scouts program, and it's scouting. They still have the BSA on their uniform and stuff, but they are just changing it to scouting. And this is because of their decision to allow in females into the Boy Scouting, which I think that generally is a really good idea. Like, why girls should be able to try to get the Eagle Scout accomplishment as well, if that's what they want to do. But I think this whole making them change the name thing is just a little crazy. I mean, if you try out for the boys' soccer team, you're still a part of the boys' soccer team. They don't change their name just because you're there. So anyway, the Boy Scout program is becoming Scouts BSA in February 2019 to reflect the decision to include young women in the Boy Scouts of America announced on Wednesday. The organization's name will remain the same, only the program for older youth will change its name. The Boy Scouts of America, or now Scouts BSA, announced this last fall they would begin allowing girls to become scouts, much to the frustration of the Girl Scouts, which has advocated for single gender scouting. And this is where my issue comes in. So the Boy Scouts are being criticized for not allowing girls into their program until up till this fall, but the Girl Scouts can seem to be exclusive to only girls, and they don't have to change their name. So there's this whole PC culture going on that we talked about last week, and ooh, hi guys, I see you popping in on Facebook Live now. So anyway, there's this whole PC culture that's just absolutely crazy, and people are taking it way too far. Girl Scouts, I mean, it's been Girl Scouts forever. Boy Scouts has been Boy Scouts forever. Just keep the name. Allow whoever you want in, I guess. There's better things in this world to be angry about than to be angry about the name of Boy Scouts. I generally think that it's a great program. I do feel that the Girl Scouts do some silly things. They don't, I mean, scouting is supposed to be about surviving in the wild and learning life skills and stuff. But then the Girl Scouts are over here planting flowers and baking cookies and learning how to clean. Which, cool, if you like that, you're into that, go ahead and do it. But if you're a more adventurous girl, you should be allowed to go into Boy Scouts. But that's how it is. It's Boy Scouts. You're going into the Boy Scouts. And it's nothing derogatory to try and put girls down. It's just what it's been called. And people just need to get over it. Because we're not trying to put girls down or put them in certain roles. I think we've matured a lot as society from putting girls into certain like gender roles.
You know, I just want to say something here that, you know, things change over time. Mm-hmm. And if scouting was that way when girls had to cook and bake cookies and things like that, there's a wonderful program for that, a 4-H program. Mm-hmm. And I think what you said, scouting should be about surviving in the wild and projects to do with that.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, there are other programs for that. And when we talk about gender separation today, there's service clubs like Kiwanis and Rotary Lions. They're men and women. Now, there is a service club called the Seroptimist, and that's for women only. So it just seems like men take a back seat.
They do.
On the blending of organizations, and, you know.
Yeah, you don't see guys getting all riled up that they can't join the Girl Scouts or these women-only programs. Women seem to have to infiltrate every society and organization possible, but you don't see them changing their rules to allow men. And I just think this whole gender issue is a bit ridiculous, to say the least. So the Scouts are saying, as we enter a new era for our organization, it's important that all youth can see themselves in scouting in every way possible, which is great. I really like that aspect. But again, I don't agree with the name change. It's kind of dumb. Boy Scouts of America chief executive said in a statement that is why it's important that the name for our scouting program for older youth remain consistent with the single name approach used for the Cub Scouts. I'm just going to keep saying the same thing. I really don't think that a name change is necessary. I think people are overreacting, and PC culture is just getting a little out of hand. So that's my thought on that. And at the Cub Scout meeting yesterday, there were some Weeblos. That's the highest rank of Cub Scouts. They were moving up to Boy Scouts. And of course, they reflected the name change already. And they were calling it the Scouting Program. I noticed on their little kerchiefs on the back of it, it says BSA. But they wouldn't call it the Boy Scouts. They called it Scouting. And I think it's silly. Because if you're a girl going into Boy Scouts, which you should be allowed to do, that's exactly what you're doing. You're a girl going into Boy Scouts. And I think that says a lot more than just saying you're going into scouting. So that's my dig on that topic for today. So something I wanted to mention was I really like to support local businesses. And the best way to do that, one of the best ways, is to go to your local farmers market every week. You got to look around, search online, find out where they are, when they're going on. I know Schenectady has a really great one on Sundays, I believe. And they got lots of honey and plants and meat and cool things going on. You really, as libertarians, we say we vote with our dollar, right? So that voting with your dollar, the best way to do that is to support local people, your neighbors, your community. Because honestly, you're going to make the most change in your localized community. It's really, really hard to make a change on a federal or national level. If you want to start, you got to start local. And putting money into your local community is going to make a bigger difference in your own life than trying to put it anywhere else. So I'm not entirely sure where Saratoga farmers markets are. Where are they?
The farmers market is on High Rock Avenue, where if you go down Lake Avenue and take a left at the police station, no, you go down another block, take a left, and you just go down that street. They have it's noted as one of the better. I mean, it's undercover. They have quite a few vendors there, And I think they still have one on Sundays at the Dance Museum in the State Park. But the April to October is the one outside, and it's a big one. You should, you know.
Yeah, I should
go. It's on Wednesday and Saturdays.
Wednesdays and Saturdays in Saratoga. So do your research. Your communities will have a farmer's market. I can't tell you when they are or what times or whatever, but they're really great events to go to, and don't feel pressured to buy everything, because I do all the time. I like try a sample of honey here, try a sample of guacamole here, look at the jewelry over here. And so it's like, I just want to buy everything. But take a business card. That everyone has business cards. These people will be more than happy to give you a business card. Rack them up. That way, the next time you need peanut butter, you can look through your business cards. Find your local person that makes peanut butter. It definitely makes a difference in their lives as well as your own eventually. And so that's my little segment on that. I have a lot to get through here today, so I'm trying not to spend too much time on each topic. But so something that multiple people sent me was about Seattle. So Seattle is proposing an employment tax, and it's a little bit crazy. So they're telling businesses that they have to pay a tax per hour on each individual employee they have. And yes, you can already see how crazy that sounds. So I'm going to read through this article with you guys. And it was sent to me by like five different people. So as self-inflicted wounds go, Seattle officials seem to have stumbled on a winning formula for tanking their city's economy and their constituents' prosperity. All it takes is a deep antipathy for laws of economics and a series of policies based on the same accumulating in a proposed tax on hours worked by the employees of large companies to fund social programs that are making little, if any, headway in their supposed missions. And so this is to try to combat their Seattle's campaign against homelessness. Yes, so they're forcing these people to pay a tax to try to pay for the homeless. Instead of trying to fundraise money for it, they're just going to take it from somebody. So, anyway, an employee hours tax is hereby levied upon and shall be collected from every person for the act or privilege of engaging in business activities within the city, reads the tax bill, which appears to have four of the necessary five city council votes locked up. The tax shall be measured by the number of employee hours of work conducted within the city during each quarter of the calendar year. Every hour worked will bring in 26 cents from large employers with revenues of more than $20 million, for a grand total expected to tally up to between $25 million and $75 million. The bulk of that take is earmarked for the city's year-long campaign against homelessness. Why the wide range for projected revenue? Well, predicting economic activity is an inexact science at best, especially when the companies you're planning to soak threaten to go elsewhere and take their jobs with them. Specifically, in response to the proposed employment tax, Amazon paused construction on a downtown office tower and may sublease space in another building rather than use that space itself. So I don't understand how they think this is gonna bring money into them, because threatening these people with the highest head tax, employment head tax in the country, it would be if it passes, threatening these businesses with that only discourages employing people. So it's gonna make your homeless problem even worse if you're discouraging employment. These people, they're not going to get the money they're projecting, because these people are going to bring their business elsewhere. At least the big companies will. Any little companies are going to suffer and most likely go out of business. I don't understand how they don't see this is only going to harm their city's economy. Okay, so The company, helmed by Jeff Bezos, is planned to fill its 17-story Block 18 tower and the skyscraper being built at Rainier Square with an estimated 7,000 to 8,000 workers, the Seattle Times reported. So, I'm not a mathematician, but think about 26 cents an hour, 40 hours a week, for 7 to 8,000 workers. Think about that a year. Do I have a calculator on this computer? And do I know where to find it? I have no idea, or else I do the math for you, but get your calculators out.
What was it again?
It was 26 cents an hour.
Okay.
And and they're talking about full-time employees. Right. 40 hours a week.
Okay.
And 8,000 workers.
8,000 workers. And we'll figure they work 50 weeks a year. They get 2 weeks vacation.
Yeah.
Okay. I'll figure it out and get it back to you.
Okay. So we're going to have those numbers up in a minute for you. So the city, the city is crying, Jeff Bezos is a bully. Okay. This is coming from the city council's resident overt socialist, Kishama Sawant, or I don't even know how to say that name. There's the city socialist of Seattle is screaming Jeff Bezos is a bully. No, he's not a bully. He's smart. He's not going to do business there if he has to pay an outrageous amount of money to employ people. Why should you have to pay to have employees? You're already paying them to work there. I don't understand how people don't see this as ridiculous. I don't get it. It just blows my mind. So anyway, Seattle officials had no warning that Amazon was unhappy with the city's anti-business rhetoric and its intrusive policies, which include high taxes, a soaring minimum wage, and a nanny-ish sugar tax and expensive labor mandates. In setting the expectations for a second headquarters, Amazon specified that it was looking for a stable and business-friendly environment. And this is where I come in to say, yeah, big businesses, people get scared of them because they collude with the government, they lobby for things, they do payouts and stuff, but that's the crony capitalism thing. I'm talking about business in general. I mean, Amazon has no incentive to make its employees unhappy or to be unfair to them. They want people to work for them. I just don't understand that. Businesses have incentive to be good to their employees. And so if it's not a stable business friendly environment for these employees and for the business itself, they're just not going to do business there, because they'd rather appeal to themselves business wise but also appeal to their employees, because they want to keep those workers, they want good workers, they want them to be happy. And that's just what we live in now. We don't live in a time anymore where kids are getting sucked into sewing machines and fires are happening. It's just some of these labor laws are ridiculous to even think we have to keep. So anyway, Seattle City Council members responded last October with a letter pleading, to the extent that this discussion was based on Amazon feeling unwelcome in Seattle or not being included in some of our regional decisions, we would like to hit the refresh button. All right, so they really want Amazon, but it doesn't really seem like they do if they're going to do this head tax. They had good reason to plead. In 2015, the city's budget department attributed 43% of jobs created in the post-Great Recession recovery to Amazon and Boeing. I don't even know. Boeing?
Yeah.
What is that?
A company that makes airplanes.
Oh, Boeing. Really?
Yeah.
Interesting.
Boeing, is it?
Yeah, Boeing. Yeah. To Amazon and Boeing, directly and also indirectly through secondary and territory effects. Maybe, just maybe, employers and workers targeted by the proposed employee hours tax might be less resistant to being soaked if the money wasn't so likely to be unproductively passed away while homelessness continues to worsen. Exactly. These people are starting to realize that, all right, you say you're going to do good things with this money. Okay, well, the problem is not decreasing. So what is the money being used for? And I shared a good meme the other day. It was, I can't remember the movie, but I think it was Robin Hood, a cartoon version of Robin Hood, maybe. And it was this animal character with a pot of gold in his hand. And he said, let's just tell them it's for the roads and they'll be okay with us stealing their money. It's exactly what it is. But, you know, the roads don't get better. People start to wonder. So anyway, where was I? But this week, Seattle residents learned that KOMO News has obtained and unpublished a report that shows how the city spent more than $53 million on the homeless in 2017. Although millions have been spent, Seattle's homeless population continues to rise. Okay, so these people, this is exactly what a Orwellian thing would be going on here from 1984. This news agency published and then unpublished this report about the money being spent for homelessness and how it wasn't helping. So, like, I always bring up 1984, but in 1984, news stories and headlines would be completely erased from existence and, like, wiped out of everybody's minds if it didn't correspond the next thing that happened. And it's just a little crazy. And I will continue to tell you guys that we are definitely going in that direction.
If I am correct, on that calculation, it's $4,160,000.
And that's just for Amazon.
Right. That's just for Amazon.
That's just for Amazon. Oh, my God.
Now, I will say, I read an article this week about that Jeff Bezos, and Amazon is one of the lowest paid, the employees are one of the lowest paid of any corporation. I think they make an average of, I can't remember now what the figure was, $13 an hour. And for a company the size of Amazon and how much money they make, it just seems like the employees could make a bit more.
Yeah, I think it also has to do with the service that they provide the company. Mm-hmm. Is it worth more? Maybe there are some departments of that company where they should be getting paid more.
Oh, they probably are. This was the warehouse workers.
Yeah, like are they worth more than that? Are they not? I mean, when you start, you can negotiate your starting price. And okay, actually, a lot of employers would rather you negotiate your starting price rather than just say, yes, I'll take this. Mm-hmm. It shows that you realize you value what you're worth and stuff. And that's what I do with jobs. I try to negotiate it. And some of them hardball and they say, no, this is what I'm going to pay you.
Right.
And then that's your decision. If you think you're worth that, take the job. Some people are forced to take the job just because they need a job.
Right.
But either way, I think maybe I'm not a big fan of minimum wage laws just because somebody that is doing the work of $5 an hour shouldn't have to get 15.
Right.
So I really think it should be based on
your production.
What you yourself are worth and what the job is worth. Definitely. I think that makes a lot more sense than having like a flat minimum wage. That's a hard, hard argument to get into though, because there's a lot of benefits to a minimum wage, but there's also a lot of disadvantages to a minimum wage. And so maybe I could be wrong, but maybe the people that aren't getting paid more than 13, maybe that's all their work is worth.
Could be. I mean, like, who I knows? Say it's a warehouse work and mm-hmm. You know.
Yeah. I just think it's ridiculous that they're trying to push this head tax and that there's a lot of support for it, And it's really only going to make the city worse.
Well, you got to remember Seattle's kind of a, or Washington's kind of a crazy state. Seattle's kind of a nutty city too.
Yeah.
So, I mean, they're always going to do things that aren't making sense.
Yes. You know? And they somehow get support to do it.
Yeah.
And what's weird is before this proposed bill, there was another head tax bill a year or two before this that was turned down. It was a lot less than this. And now they're coming out with this astronomical number. And they're going to do a lot more harm than they think they are going to do good. And they know that too. But they're trying to pass it off to everybody as that it's going to do a lot of good. And that's what we see all the time, government trying to do, oh, this is going to be good, it's going to help, it's going to do this, it's going to do that. And no, it really just hurts you worse. So,
well, you know, one of the state senators of the state of Washington has complained because his business, he owns a pizza franchise, big one. And he said that his business will be hurt because of that.
Yes, little business. I mean, even big businesses are going to be hurt by it. Every business is all over. It's but you know, you're going to put so many people out of business, and like if you're trying to get people to want to start businesses and want to work and want to hire people to work for them, why are you going to disincentivize that? And so it's really just going to run people out of the town. All you're going to be left with is the people that have to stay that can't afford to leave. And you're just going to have a lot of vacant businesses. You're going to have people going broke. That homelessness is going to rise. And it's really just it contradicts itself so
well,
much.
You know what? I'm just reading further into the story on the senator, and he was saying that under the proposal, the tax would be levied on businesses that have at least $20 million in annual gross sales. So it may not be the small businesses. I think how the small businesses would be hurt is if the big companies stop buying from small companies. I think that's what he's saying, that the employees may be paying or the business may be paying on those employees and may stop doing business with small companies because they can't give them the pricing. So that would impact small business, which the whole thing doesn't make sense.
Yeah, either way you spin this bill, I don't understand how anyone would want to get behind it. They're really just trying to get more money for something that we don't know about. So let's see here. Speaking of bills being passed, I'm going to talk about some. I had a really good follower send me this article here about Connecticut Senate passes a bill giving electoral votes to the presidential candidate who wins the popular vote. So if you follow that with me, you can kind of understand how silly that sounds. Sorry, I'm trying to not get this video to play. I don't want it to play. Wow, there's so many pop-ups on this. They're just everywhere. All right, so Connecticut State Senate on Saturday voted in favor of a measure to give the state's electoral votes to the presidential candidate who wins the popular vote. The move puts the state in a position to become the 11th, in addition to Washington, D.C., to join an interstate compact to pool their electoral college votes for the candidate who wins the popular vote. The state Senate voted 21-14 in favor of the bill, with the support of three GOP lawmakers. The measure passed the state House on a 77-73 vote last month. Democratic Governor Daniel Malloy is expected to sign the legislation, according to the report. With the addition of Connecticut's 7 electoral votes, the compact would have 172 in total. For the compact to go into effect nationally, it would need 270 electoral votes, the national or the number needed for the candidate to win the presidency. The nationwide effort to form the compact gained traction after George W. Bush won the 2000 presidential election without winning the popular vote and took on new life after the 2016 election. President Trump won the Electoral College, but Democratic nominee Hillary Clinton won the popular vote by nearly 3 million votes. So what they're trying to say here is that they're going to promise their electoral votes to whatever candidate wins the popular vote by the people. I just think our election process is a little silly to begin with. I mean, how can you have a country of 50 states all voting for one person to rule us all? And we just have way too many people to be doing that. So it's majority rule. So if you go by popular vote, say you have 51% and then you have 49%, you're going to tell me that 51% is going to decide that this person should rule over the other 49% that doesn't want that person? So popular vote doesn't work. The way we do it is we elect representatives to vote for us, and our votes, yeah, they matter, but not really, because it's the Electoral College that votes by the representatives that we should be putting in place to suit our needs based on your districts and stuff. But for this Connecticut's Electoral College to promise their votes on the popular vote's a little ridiculous.
Well, if you know about the Electoral College and mm-hmm. why it was started, it was to protect small states from not having a voice in the election. Now, New York and California control a lot of popular or electoral college votes. So if you get five or six states that have the largest amount of electoral votes, like Florida, Texas, California, Washington, and Connecticut, and New York, they could possibly win the election with just those states.
Yeah.
And I think, and the Electoral College protects small states because, let's say, New York, I mean, it's heavily Democratic. Republicans are never going to win the state in a presidential election or a state election. But portions of the state, like maybe the north part of our state here where we are, the Republican gets the vote. Well, those electoral colleges, they'll divide that up in the state, will go towards the Republican candidate, and mm-hmm. then so many will go to the Democratic candidate, where now they'll all go to whoever wins the state, and there's more votes south of Westchester
right.
County than there are in upstate New York. And
so you have downstate controlling what everything. Happens for the whole state of New York.
Country, right.
Yeah. So I don't think our system at all has it. We haven't figured out how to best represent the people yet, and maybe we won't, but that's why I keep telling you it's important to do local elections, get involved locally, support local businesses, worry about your state. I mean, yes, worry about your country, our country, because we live here. It's our country. The Fed rules everybody.
That's right.
But
and one of the scary things is the 11 states that have approved this control 172 electoral votes. They only need 98 more to reach the 270 mark. So if there's a big state there that hasn't, that will vote on this, then the elections don't matter for probably 95% of the country.
Right. And sorry, pop-ups. I strongly believe in states' rights and the individual state. I feel like I just feel like it's too hard to have a country that tries to rule over 50 states.
Exactly.
I mean, we've seen in past history, we got the Ottoman Empire, the Byzantine Empire, the Roman Empire. They all collapsed. Why? Because they got too big. They were trying to rule too many people. And the kid that I tutor, we've been going over this in his global homework, all these empires and the rise and the fall of them, and it's all the same. And I think when you try to take on too much land, too many people, it doesn't work because you can't govern all of them. That, you know, the people in Maine don't have the same needs, the same wants, the same outlook on life, the geography. Their life is completely different than somebody in Texas. Mm-hmm. And what they may want in government is can be completely different. So I don't think it's doable. And I mean, we keep trying, but I feel like maybe not in my lifetime, but eventually we're just going to fall apart and we should just go back to states. Mm-hmm. Because it just doesn't make sense to just control this whole vast land of people. And it just, our population keeps growing and growing and growing. And, you know, Texas and California are always talking about secession because they feel the same way. It's too hard to represent the needs and the wants of everybody in 50 states. Yeah. And I mean, Hawaii isn't even close to us.
I know.
They're so far away and we control them. It's just a little ridiculous. And that's a big topic to handle. But I mean, it might be in the future, not the near future, but maybe the far future.
Yeah.
Definitely probably start seeing states secede. Maybe, who knows?
Hey, they changed their electoral college way of voting. So I don't think that's
too
out
far
of the
off.
Realm either.
No, states are going to start getting fed up with the other states that have power and control in elections.
Sure.
And to every right for them. I mean, if they think they can do it better, go by all means, go ahead and try.
Yeah.
If you don't want to be a part of us, go ahead and try. I don't blame you. I don't want to be a part of us either. Not until we start doing stuff that makes sense. So other things that don't make sense. Rick here sent me this article about, it's called City High School Grads at CUNY, CUNY is how you say it, needing remedial education. We talked about this the other day, that some kids aren't meant for college. So let's go through this with you guys. A stunning 77.6% of NYC public high school graduates who entered CUNY community colleges as freshmen last fall needed remediation in math, reading, or writing. Despite their high school diplomas, the grads failed CUNY admission tests in one or more of the key subjects. All right, if you're failing a college entrance test, do you really think you should be there? Like, I'm sorry, but you know, maybe it's not meant for you, and maybe we shouldn't be paying to have you there. The only good news, the number of unprepared city grads dipped a modest 1.7% from 2012, when 79.3% of entering students needed to bone up on basics. So it's going down a little, but it's
1%, that's
yeah,
not an awful lot.
It's not enough, but I still think it's outrageous. They're trying to sugarcoat it here. They're like, it's going down. So in releasing the damning data, SUNY cited success with a pre-community college program is started 4 years ago to tackle the flood of unready students. CUNY START takes mostly high school grads who fail at least two admission tests. They agree to postpone enrollment for up to 6 months to focus on raising their skills. Upon completion, about 70% pass a test they failed before, and 48% become fully proficient or college ready, officials said. The abundance of ill-prepared grads is cited as evidence that city schools have handed out credits like candy to push kids along and out, and they do that. They really do that. I've seen people get pushed through school, and I don't even live in the city. the remediation rate is way too high because the Bloomberg administration put graduation over proficiency with an epidemic of online credit recovery and other strategies that shortchange students, said Brooklyn College education professor David Bloomfield. They give press conferences tutoring the graduation rate, then offload the costs, money, time, and effort onto CUNY and those students. New York has adopted the Common Core standards, a set of skills kids should learn from kindergarten to 12th grade to prepare for college, but the Board of Regents says it won't require college-ready test scores until 2022, which we're getting rid of Common Core anyway.
Right.
So.
Well, you know, and this was just on New York State. The federal, I mean, the national averages reflect just about this, too. I mean, the numbers.
It's just ridiculous that we're pushing so many people to go to college.
If you can't, what happened? You know, when I went to school, if you couldn't pass a grade, you stayed back.
Until you get it.
Right.
Or until you decide you're not ever going
to
get it.
Or you went to summer school. And yeah. A lot of schools don't offer summer school anymore. And it's like, how can you get out of high school and not know anything and try to go to college?
Right. College is for certain people. Trade school is for certain people. Prep school, you could go to prep school to go to college before you go to college and help get ready. But just forcing, or not forcing, but like heavily pushing all these kids to go into college right after high school is not good for everybody. It's very detrimental education and financially to these people you're pushing that aren't ready to go or that shouldn't be there. And I'm not saying that there's a whole bunch of stupid people. I'm not trying to call people stupid, but I'm just saying college isn't for everybody.
Right.
And if you don't have what it takes to be there, you shouldn't be there. You should be doing something else. Go find something you like to do. Go find a passion. Act on that passion. You don't have to go to college. And these kids are only going because they're told they have to.
Right.
That they can't do anything without a college education.
But can you see what, you know, in the overall picture of things, take New York, for example, you know, with the article you're citing, you want to offer community colleges free tuition.
Right.
Okay. Well, why is that? Because the students couldn't get in otherwise. All right. Now, the thing is you're a college student yourself. Okay. The transition from high school to college is traumatic sometimes.
It is.
I mean, it's not.
So I went through high school just not having to study for anything because I've always been pretty smart. I just always paid attention in class, was able to do the tests, and I got through really, really good. I did really well. Never had to put extra time into things. That's why I did so many extracurricular activities, because I had that time. I wasn't one of the kids that was a bad test taker. And so I did really, really well. But then you get to college, and you know, it's a whole different ballpark that high school, public schools don't teach you for or don't get you prepared for, because you get there and your class is not, your professor's not teaching you the material. They give you where to find it, and then you have to go home and study the materials that they give you, and then you discuss it in class. You're not learning it in class. You're learning it outside of class, and class is where you go just to talk about it and discuss it and elaborate on it. And that's what not a lot of kids realize, because in school, in public schools, you are being taught in class, and then you don't have to go home and do anything. You can do your homework real quick, but you don't have to go home and study and figure things out on your own and then bring questions to class. We're not preparing kids for college as well as we should. And on that topic, I do have a chart here. It's called Inflation Adjusted Cost of a K-12 Public Education and Percent Change in Achievement of a 17-Year-Old Since 1970. So I don't know if you guys are familiar with the Board of Education, but we didn't even have the Board of Education until the 70s. And school seemed to be doing just fine without it, I'll say. And so we instilled this Board of Education, hoping that it's going to, we're going to keep up with all these other countries that are doing better with education. So I have a chart here. starts at the cost in 1970 that we were pouring into K through 12 public education, started at $50,000. And all the way up, this chart only goes to 2006. All the way up to 2006, it increased $100,000 more. So at 2006, you're up here in $150,000. And then so at the bottom of the chart is reading scores, math scores, and science scores. And they stay the same. And actually, science scores dip down and come up just a little, but they stayed straight line. And it's at 0%. 0%. It didn't even go up any. And science even went down to negative 10%. But yet, we increased spending $100,000 more with this Board of Education. How do people not realize, like, I got so much feedback on this chart when I posted it. People were like, see, like, we don't need the Board of Education. We don't need, yes, people are like, keep dumping money into education. We need to spend more on education. And I told people that we shouldn't be doing that. And people are like, oh, well, you don't want to support our children and educating them and spending money on them. And I'm like, well, when I see that it's not changing anything, then no, maybe we should change how we're educating them, because spending more money on them isn't doing anything. how are we looking on time here?
We have about 14 minutes.
Oh, cool, cool, cool. So I know I want to get Noah some time to talk, not yet, but pretty soon. He's been really, really good. If you guys want to see him, I'll flip the camera around. Say hi. So I'll give him a few minutes towards the end here. I posted this chart on Facebook, and the comments that I got back were great. I saw a whole bunch of like very educated discussion on it, which I like to see, because usually when I see things like controversial issues like this, I see people arguing and calling him stupid and stuff. Like the other day, I said, I don't feel like I should have to pay for everybody's healthcare. And there was a lot into that argument. That's just a broad statement. That doesn't go into my entire belief. But as a libertarian, you can kind of see where I'm coming from with that, if you know our basic ideals. But anyway, I got a whole bunch of negative lashback on that, calling me all sorts of kind of names, and I was just, all I was giving was educated discussion about it. But on this post that I posted, I had people getting into the people posting other links, other charts, like posting paragraphs and paragraphs of discussion just between people, and I haven't even said anything on this yet, so I appreciate you all. People are like, makes you wonder where all the money goes. They're like, I have friends who teach, and they buy a lot of things out of their own pockets, and I promise that money's not going to their salaries. No, it's not. It's going to adding more administrators that don't do anything. It's going into more test prep. It's going into test correctors and all sorts of things that just don't help education. And I think we got to stop just dropping money bombs into education if it's not doing anything.
Well, I had a candidate come over to the house, you know, just like politics, they come to the house and vote for me. And they said, what do you think of the school budget? And I says, I never vote for a school budget. I always vote no. I said, I never vote for a school budget, and I won't until there's a decrease in administrators. And I said, if you take out some administrators in a school district, I said, then I'll vote for a school budget. I said, but until then, it's meaningless, because all you do is mm-hmm. add administrators, and they don't make what teachers make. You know, they're in the $100,000, $125,000 ranges, and we're way overloaded at the top.
Yes. So I know you guys hear me advocate for Larry Sharp all the time. He is firmly believes in getting rid of administrators. He says, the first thing I'm going to do for education is cut administrators. He goes, it's not going to make them happy. It's not going to make them vote for me, but that's what needs to be done. And he goes, he wants to stop testing or stop teaching for tests, which is great. He's like, no, let the teachers teach. They know how their classroom learns. He goes, Common Core, all right, it's a different way of thinking and learning. But, you know, the mandate is ridiculous because not every kid learns good with Common Core. So the kids that do learn good with it, all right, cool. Like, that works for you, good. But not every kid works well with that. So teachers need to feel out their classrooms and their individual students and figure out how to teach them what works for them. And I really think that's going to be good. And like I said, June 9th, he's going to be at Green Wolf Brewing Company. Green Wolf Brewing Company, I think it was. Let me double check that. Green Wolf Brewing Company. It's, I think it's in Middleburg. Yeah, it's in Middleburg. It's Green Wolf Brewing Company. June 9th, he's going to be there. You can meet Larry Sharp, talk with him, have some great beer. You guys know me. I like my craft beer. So I'll be there. So if you want to meet me, I'll be there.
That's right. But, meet the great Shan.
Yeah, but we're going to be there to meet Larry Sharp. Hopefully I can ask him some questions. And definitely follow him, look him up, check out his Facebook Live videos. He does Facebook Live videos, takes calls and questions from the public on his live stream. He's on there for like an hour or two. It's really great. I try to watch whenever I have the time to. So gonna try to wrap up here a little bit. Don't forget, I do have you on Facebook Live today because I was putting the number up. But my show gets uploaded to SaratogaBroadcasting.com. I also upload it to my website, ShakedownShanPodcast.com. I also have a Facebook page. I have a Twitter page. I'm not too heavy on Twitter yet. I'm still getting used to all the social media for this show. And I'm on Instagram. And you can get it on iTunes. There's so many different ways to listen. I try to make it accessible to anyone who wants to listen. So share the show. Tell your friends. I mean, I really, really, really just I want to get these ideas out here. And if you guys really believe in these libertarian ideas and values, I hope you share this to other people that might be on the fence. Because, you know, we don't want to like force them over, but we just want to like get them thinking, get people thinking. And if you really want to support liberty, you got to support the voices of liberty. And the best thing you can do is tell your friends, share the show, invite them to the page, whatever. Just get the word out there. Is his mic on? All right. So Noah, I'm going to flip the camera. He's been a great. So today's Mother's Day, so he came with me to the studio today. Say hi.
Hi.
So I'm going to give him just a few minutes to talk here.
I hope you all have a good Mother's Day. Well, this is my first time being here.
Yeah, and you're a natural. I'll tell you, you're doing pretty good.
Hey, I know.
I want to ask you a couple questions about scouting. What's the most fun that you do in scouting?
Well, by being a tiger, it was like all the days.
All the days?
I went to a Cub Scout.
Okay. Do you go camping?
Not yet.
Not yet?
But I think I will go when I'm a go sometime in the pack.
Okay.
Meeting.
In your pack meeting?
Yeah.
And you have,
I think like for 4 days.
Yeah, for 4 days. Wow. And you have a lot of fun? You like scouting?
Yes.
Yeah? I'm going to call it Boy Scouting, okay? Because, yeah. Well, you're in Cub Scouts now.
He's in Cub Scouts right now.
Yep.
And that keeps you busy on Saturdays, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yesterday, before I went to Cub Scouts, I went to a birthday party.
You did?
Yeah.
You had a friend that had a birthday party?
Yeah.
How old how old is he?
It's a she.
Oh, it's a she. Oh, how old is she?
she's 6, same as me, but I'm going to be turned to 7.
You are?
In July 21st.
In July? Well, my birthday's in July, too.
21st?
No, the 7th. And I'm going to be turning 23.
Well, my mom's birthday already went past.
Yeah.
It was like last week.
Last week, I know. Last Saturday.
The 5th.
The 5th.
And part of this week, Monday was my grandpa's birthday.
Really?
Yeah.
So you have a lot of May birthdays. You know what today is?
What?
What's a special day today?
Mother's Day.
That's right, Mother's Day.
And in art at school, I made like this flower.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I bet you she liked that.
Like a dot.
Yeah.
A dots thing.
Right.
And we use this kind.
Okay.
You know those things that's not like string? Yeah, string.
Yeah.
Different color string.
Right, right.
Pipe cleaner.
Green.
Yeah.
I did green and I made a car.
Well, boy. You do good.
Inside it said, I love you.
Really? That's very nice.
Yeah.
Isn't it nice making things for mom?
Yes.
Yeah. Moms are special, especially today, but every day of the year. And I know your mom says you're a very good boy. And that's good.
Yep.
Yeah. All right.
And that's Noah's take. Noah, do you have anything to say about liberty?
I think it's not right.
What?
You think it's not right?
I think you got that mixed up.
I don't know what it means anyways.
Okay.
You know what? That's a good answer. If you don't know what
don't
it means,
know.
Anything means, just say that. That's okay. You don't think it's right. That's okay.
All right, so now that we got Noah all confused, we're going to head out for the day. So thank you for listening. Share with your friends and everything, and I'll see you next week. Positive vibes.
Know why I came today? Because nobody else.